Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season two is out now from Lemonada Media.
Blackbusters.
Oh, here we go. What's cracking, family? Welcome back to another episode of Blackbusters, the best black movie or the best movie review podcast in the world.
In the world, Craig.
I'm your host, Big John, and this is my co-host.
We're literally trading places right now. So I'm trading tone. This is trading tone right now.
Trading places, trading tone. For sure. As y'all can see, we are doing something different for the first time. This is our first episode where we are remotely podcasting today. Just trying something different. And this is an effort to possibly have other guests on the show that are not local. So this is our first time trying on a new format to where we could be sitting down and having the guests from all over the country, all over the world. And this is our first time making that attempt to do a podcast remotely from the crib, the office, the studio, whatever.
Yeah.
All right. So with that being said, I'm gonna go ahead and introduce my guest. Our guest is my boy for years, man, my partner. Started doing comedy with this brother, man, many years ago. A music connoisseur, a comedian connoisseur. He's a hilarious dude, a man of many talents. The man, the myth, the legend, DeJuan Brown. What's cracking, brother?
What's up, Big John?
What's going on with you, man?
What up?
And I appreciate the invite down here to kick it with y'all and talk these
yes,
movies.
Sir, yes, sir, man. Thank you for pulling up, bro. Thank you for tapping in with us, man. We got an interesting movie to do today. So let's just get right to it, man. Family, mm-hmm. We are doing the movie Trading Places. The legendary film Trading Places.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the thing. Trading Places, for those who don't know, if you don't know, you need to check yourself. But if you don't know, Trading Places stars Eddie Murphy, Dan Aykroyd, Don Ameche, Ralph Bellamy, also the beautiful, talented, they don't even have her name on the list.
Jamie Lee Curtis.
Jamie Lee Curtis is also in the film. Trading Places was aired in 1983. Where was y'all at in 83? I asked all the fans. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, but real quick though, Ja. Before we get to anything else, Jamie Lee Curtis had a rack.
Hey, man. Jamie Lee Curtis is cracking. Jamie Lee Curtis.
Man.
Bro, back then, even now, well, I mean, not now, obviously, she's an older woman, but like, Jamie Lee Curtis was one of the ones back in the day, bro.
Listen. Mm-hmm. Black women, you call black women thick or you say they got body, right?
Right.
If you speaking that in white people terms, it's racked. And Jamie Lee Curtis had a rack. She was hot and she had a rack.
Right. Hey, that's crazy thing about it is she played a prostitute.
Yeah.
People are prostitute 83. So I wanted for those, I'm gonna keep it 100. The movie is one of my favorite movies from Eddie Murphy or Dan Aykroyd, because they made so many that I love. But this movie is bigger than the comedy, in my opinion.
Okay.
And I'm glad that when I asked DeJuan what movie he wanted to do, he said a few movies that we already did reviews on, unfortunately. But he mentioned Trading Places. And the first thought to me, Tone, was like, damn, is Trading Places a blackbuster?
That's the question.
And the answer, he answered it. He was like, it's Eddie Murphy. And we've made this statement before. You get no blacker than Eddie Murphy. You get no blacker than Eddie Murphy.
Hey.
He's such a pillar in our culture that you can put him in a movie like Golden Child, where there's not many black people, if any at all, and it's still a blackbuster in a sense because it's Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
He's the forefront of the culture. You know what I mean? And that's kind of what you were saying to me, DeJuan. He was like, not only is it Eddie Murphy, but it's dealing with black. Like, it's dealing with, like, the cultural experiment they did in the movie was pretty damn dope. I love the writing in it. And it pretty much, it's about race. It's about race. It's about that this black man, this white man, put them in, you trade their places and put them in different roles in life and see how they come out. See how they behave. I think it's a very smart movie. I wonder, actually, you know what? I'm going to save this question for the end of this of episode. Right now, I just want to give a floor to one of y'all, or just talk to DeJuan about, like, why do you think this is a blackbuster? And I agree with you. I want the supporters and the viewers to hear your reason.
I call it a blackbuster because, one, it says Eddie Murphy. If Eddie Murphy's in it, we watch it, especially in the 80s. Wow. You know, it's like, Eddie Murphy means 90% of black eyes are going to watch it, period.
Yes, sir.
Two, like, when you look at Eddie Murphy, even movies that weren't meant for him became his movies. Like, Beverly Hills Cop was meant for, what's his name, Sylvester Stallone to play. And it was a totally different script, but he flipped it into that. So when we did with Trading Places, a lot of those lines were improv in the movie, but it's really a movie about life and a movie about race. And the movie about the old scientific question, nature versus nurture. And when it comes to the questions of race in this country, people try to make it a scientific nature argument when you're dealing with a group of people, black people, why we can't get ahead. They all try to make it, they back in the old days, especially in the olden days, it's gotten different now. But in the old days, there's a scientific thing. They would measure our craniums and say, this is why we aren't intelligent. IQ tests are slanted in a way that's going to come in confrontation with our culture and then make your test scores look a certain way. And so it talks about the whole nature thing, but it also talks about nurture, which is culture. Your environment you were raised in, how that precipitates how you your outcomes in life. And you see how, you know, Eddie Murphy, he was raised in, you know, when that scene in the car when he was like, you were raised in a poor environment. He's like, yeah, we was poor, so what? Like, you see his environment is why Billy Ray Valentine was a hustler, was a jive talk. But give that same individual a different environment, you might get a different outcome versus the other people who are on top. They say, oh, this person, oh, they're born to run a business. Uh-huh. They're born to run it. Right. His dad and uncle were saying business terms that we ain't going to hear until college when he was 2 months old. So,
2 years old. 2 months old. Yeah.
So the movie really highlights in a very comical but serious way because it weaves a fine line between comedy and real. Right. And shows you that, hey, look, man, we all just an opportunity away. And just because you is down and out don't mean that you always going to be down and out. And just because you on top don't mean you always going to be on top. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit of luck involved, and it's a little bit of trickery on top of all of us. But that's a little bit. Right. I don't want to talk too much about
that. Yeah.
I guess you're later on.
It's interesting because on paper, this is not a blackbuster. Right, like the story is about Dan Aykroyd, right? Like, you know, he's our character. Everything that happens in this movie kind of happens to him, right? Like, he's got the primary story arc. When Eddie is on camera, Eddie is so authentically black, right? Like he is so, he sounds black. He's talking black. I mean, so every time he's on camera, if it was a white movie, Eddie transports us back into the black world. What I also love about this movie, and it's sneaky, and again, Ja, we don't always see this because we're in Los Angeles, and the service industry in Los Angeles is predominantly employs Hispanic people. So we are used to seeing Hispanic people in service work. But in this movie, in 83, all of the servant work are black. So the black people are in that world, but not a part of that world, right? Right. There's black people that are there at the social club, black people that are there. The way the movie starts and they do the montage of Philly and you see so many black people, right, like around. And I think that's what kind of makes this movie, and you called it out, Duane, it's about race. It's about class. It's about wealth. But the backdrop of the movie is fundamentally about race. Right. And I think that's how it just skates by into blockbuster territory. And they aren't heavy handed with it, but you 100% know it's about race. Mm-hmm. When they say we would never hand over this company to a nigger. Right. Like, you know, that's the part where they bring it. Yep. That's what makes us a black movie.
Mm-hmm. Of course, you say most blockbusters, the categories and the different characteristics of a blockbuster is majority black. Black characters, black writers, black director, black people in the film, and it's mostly black. This still may, I know Hit Rim might not seem like a blockbuster, but it does seem like a blockbuster to me, even though most of the characters are white. But I can see, but this movie, in my opinion, isn't just for white people.
Mm-hmm.
It is. As you said, Eddie Murphy's in it. So black people, they want black people to come watch this film. They want black people to watch this film. You know what I'm saying? So Loki can say it's for blacks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I say it's in the middle because we also got to go back to time and place because we're in 2024 and people who are younger, born in the last 30 years, they see a different America. But if we're dealing with 1983 America for the most part is still black and white.
Still segregated.
Other races are coming in, but they're at a much lower number than they are right now. Mm-hmm. It seems like Philadelphia. I did a show in Philadelphia a couple months ago. Philadelphia is still black and white. You know, unlike other parts of the country. So you're dealing with when the movie opens up and you see those paintings on the walls. Yeah. You're dealing with this is an American story we're dealing with, the old school American story that still exists now. They've added new agendas to it. Mm-hmm. But this the underlying story to America going back to the year 1619. It's the first story of America.
Yeah,
the story between white and black and how you notice, and also it's showing how the wealthy elite, the one percenters are puppet stringing the white people that we see in front of us, the ones that we think are the ones holding us back to people who think on that level, they hold us back. You think it's the person in that job when really is Randolph and Mortimer. You never see Randolph and Mortimer. Uh-huh. And they're the ones, but Randolph and Mortimer works at every job, but every black person is affected by this and every white person is affected by this in America. That's why it rang so true.
I thought it was so funny that Randolph and Mortimer are the only criminals.
Right.
Like they're the real criminals. Like, you know,
what's the third? Mr. Beast.
The police, he was savage.
So the police and the two wealthy, and the three criminals and the police and the two wealthy guys
are the criminals, right? Like, you know, Billy Ray, he's a hustler, but he's not a criminal, right? Like, you know, he's a con man. Like, you know, he's shaking a can of coins in it, right?
Yeah.
Like, but he's not a criminal. But out of the entire movie, the criminals, the ones that actually did the crime, were the richest motherfuckers. Like, I thought that was great.
Galore.
Exactly.
High-collar, white-collar crime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought that was great.
Years in prison. And so, like I said, there were so many hidden gems. If you're paying attention, if you watch this movie just for comedy, you're going to laugh, you're going to enjoy it, and it's going to be a good movie. which I did. As a kid, I grew up watching it, loving it. But as I got older, I'm like, this movie is political. This movie is social. You can learn lessons from this movie. You know what I'm saying? If you put a person, like, even the statements, like you said, when they was like, you're from an underprivileged home. Household. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what? Leave for them, so what? Because I'm going to make it happen regardless.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I'm going to hustle. I'm going to con all the way through life, but I'm going to get it how I get it. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And because of the circumstances I grew up in, I moved this way. Dan Aykroyd, there was the scene where Jamie Lee Curtis asked him to give her his hand, and mm-hmm. she felt his hand. She was like, man, you got the softest hand in the world, bro. You ain't had a hard day's labor working in your life.
In your life.
You know what I'm saying? She was like, this dude couldn't have been the criminal that they're saying he is. He's not that guy. So, and he doesn't even know how to hustle.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't even know how to make it happen. I was like, she made it happen by laying down on her back, getting it cracked. Mm-hmm. She said, 2 more years, I'm going to retire myself and go buy a house.
She had a plan. She had a plan.
She had a plan.
And speaking of that, and she was cool with all the brothers in the neighborhood. Everybody was respectful when she walked in. She knew their names. Wasn't nobody trying to catcall her. It was it showed respect. Like, okay, we all respect each other here in the space.
She's part of the community.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That was, I love that. So I have a question for you guys about community. I thought this was very interesting how Eddie Murphy, it seemed like, wasn't even really comfortable with his own people, or was it the environment? When he throws the party, right? He gets the money, he goes to the bar, he starts tossing money in the bar, invites everybody back to the crib, and then subsequently becomes almost disgusted with his own people and kicks everybody out, right? So it's almost kind of like, what were they trying to say with that scene about, like, you know, was it money can't buy happiness? Money can't buy friendship? Was it that, like, you know, I'm cool with y'all as long as don't nobody got shit, but if I have nice things, I don't want you to fuck? I was just trying to understand what was, I felt like it was good, but what do you guys think about, you know, his behavior at that party?
For me, the way I looked at it was, they were showing us that you can't buy friendship and you can't buy happiness. And when when you're down and out, and cause remember, he owed the bartender when he got there. He's like, what are you doing here? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so when you down and out, you look at folks that got money as if they got something that you don't have, something special. So now you see him coming with a jacket, you know, with the music playing, throwing the money around. And so he's entering new money thinking, okay, they explained about what usually takes people 5 or 6 years of money to learn. Uh-huh. In 2 scenes. They literally took all of that down and said, you walk in with your chest out, you get everything you want, everybody comes back to the crib, then you realize once you have it, that these people only want me for what I got. No matter what race you are, when you got money, when you get to the people only want you for what you got. And then you see the same thing when in the scene he has with the butler, when he's with Coleman. And Coleman's like, this is dope. And then that's when he realizes it. And then when Coleman cleans up, he's like, okay, no, I want to, he sees it. He's like, I want to keep this. Let me focus on work. And then he tells Coleman, thank you. And the way Coleman answered, Coleman, you could tell Winthorpe never told him thank you.
Yes.
You look like Coleman never said thank you. Everything's entitled. You felt entitled. Every time they said, good morning, Mr. Duke. Good morning, Mr. Duke. Good morning, Mr. Winthorpe. Mr. Winthorpe was saying morning to the people at his job, but the Dukes, they didn't speak to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody. Like you said, when William said thank you to Coleman, they changed. He was like, whoa, this was seeing me as a person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, so that was a great scene.
Right, I agree. I think that the whole situation with the bar and inviting the whole bar back to your house, he thought, like, I think it's more than it's both. It's money can't buy you happiness, money can't buy you friendship, and just like DeJuan said, people want what they can have. Once they have it, they realize it's not as important to them as they thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you remember when he was on the in the park on his knees, and he was hassling a woman to try to get a number and shit, grabbing everybody by her dress or her coat. He's a cat caller. He was trying to get some of that box. But he went upstairs and there was a naked woman in his bed. He didn't want it.
Yeah.
He appreciated for one because it wasn't nothing that he had to work for. It wasn't a genuine relationship. It wasn't a genuine feeling. And he felt like I'm being used. Using it.
Yeah.
And he thought that, but that was his thing, kind of like he was kind of like he's a swindler, a con man. And now he's kind of seeing how he sees himself. Mm-hmm. I think he saw his old self in those people.
Like an opportunist. Opportunist. Yeah, that's great.
So one day I'm too good for you people. It's more like, man, y'all only here because I got money. Y'all only here because I'm providing a fun time. Y'all didn't work for none of this. That's why it's easy to break my shit. It's easy to put your cigarettes out in my carpet. Mm-hmm. I don't care about nothing. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So I think him going home, him going to sleep at night, waking up with the attitude like, let me finally work for what he could tell he was great. He felt gratitude putting work in. And being praised for the work that he put in,
mm-hmm.
like that.
Yeah.
That's what the shit, this whole perspective, and how he moved through life.
And, like, it shows that overall, the people, they call people who are down and out lazy, that's like the common thing, or they don't want to work. It shows you that the average man, the average woman, even when it came to her, that everyone wants an honest day's work. But she always said that God blessed me with this body, so this is what I got. I'm just using what I got. Billy Ray Valentine wasn't raised in the right environment. So hustling, because he's a slick talker. But it also shows this, something I've always told the kids that I work with when I used to work with kids a lot. The drug dealer and the number one sales rep at a company are the same person.
Mm-hmm.
The CEO, they're the same person.
Yep.
They're just hustling different products.
Yep.
You put the drug dealer, somebody that's hustling, we all know these cats from the hood. We all from the hood. We all knew cats growing up. They just talk slick. They funny. They engaging.
Right.
We grew up in the 80s and we saw them every year. We saw them and they lost another tooth. You know what I mean? He's like, it was their environment that led them to that. Take that same slick talk in Eddie, Uncle Eddie, that we all know, and put him in a world to where he can now hustle stock and hustle something legal and give him his basic needs taken care of, food, clothing, and shelter. There's no telling where you can go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, I kind of feel like the movie was missing the scenes that I needed to see that I think would have really driven home the point that you were making was Billy Ray doing his homework and learning the game, right? We see him
a little more than
exactly. We should have seen the getting stronger montage, you know, him laying in the bed, Coleman bringing him books for him to like peruse through, that would have really driven home like all he needed was an opportunity, right? We see him working and we see him like making a couple of calls, it's going to do this, but it kind of happens magically. We don't get to see him. They kind of microwave his skills. And if we had seen him more than just the gift, him taking advantage of the opportunity by doing his homework, right? Like, you know, and working hard, I think it would have drove home the point that they were trying to make a little bit better. I think that what's presented on screen is mostly unbelievable. The only other thing that I would call out is there's the one scene where they explain to him what commodities are. And he very simply says, oh, so y'all a bunch of bookies, right? You know, if they had given me a, right.
And that's tight. But go further.
Had given us a couple of more scenes like that drive your point home, Duan, in terms of the lead salesman and the drug dealer, that really these worlds are very similar. And if they had a couple of more scenes where Billy Ray shows us just how similar they are, like that bookie line, right? Mm-hmm. That would have been awesome to really be it's the same thing. He understands what's happening in here.
Because
he understands what's happening out there.
You know my interpretation of why that scene didn't exist? And I was talking about this to my wife because she used to do stocks back in the day. I think the reason why that scene didn't exist was because they're kind of showing you that it's all bullshit. They really aren't. Like, when you saw the Duke, no one's really working that hard.
Yeah.
Big money, they tell us that. Big money really don't work that hard.
Right,
Randolph was saying that. He was like, this dude, Lewis Winthrop, he's a Harvard graduate. He's born to do this. He was like, man, anybody can do this. Anybody can run our company. What are you talking about?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
I remember when I used to, when I, like, when I used to work, I did like Prime America, for instance. We all got cousins that do Prime America.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They'll get anybody can do that. The person that's doing good at it is usually just a person that's just born with the gift of gab.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The person that study all day, they ain't selling nothing.
Mm-hmm.
The person really making the bread is usually just full of shit.
Right. Steve Jobs.
Right.
Steve Jobs.
It's you know, like they win regardless of whether their clients make money or not, which is dope. That. Right. He like, you know, that's literally what he said. It's such a racket, right? It's such a racket, and they're living high on the hog, right? Uh-huh. Like, you know,
yes.
High on the hog. But the movie does a good job of like, nobody that's wealthy is really decent. They don't show a good person like from Winthrop's world. None of those people are good people. His homies turned on him at the drop of a dime. His girl was full of shit. Like the best person is actually Jamie Lee Curtis's character.
You know what I mean?
Coleman too. Yeah. Like, I mean, like Coleman plays in on the ruse, which is kind of shady. Like, you know, because he had to pretend like he didn't know Winthrop, right? Like, right. You know, so that's low key kind of shady. But like, we talk about Jamie Lee Curtis. You know what I mean? Given this obviously undeserving man. You know what I mean? Like, you know, feeding him, taking care of him when he's sick. Right? Like, you know, trying to nurse him back to health. And even though, like, she's like, listen, you're my investment. Like, I'm taking you in because I actually believe you do come from this world. So when you get back on, I'm trying to get paid. So she isn't, like, 100% an angel. But, like, by comparison, all the stock market motherfuckers was shit.
She's the best person.
Todd took his girl.
He was plotting the whole time, dog.
Plotting the whole time. They was together. Ty was looking. Remember, he was with Penelope, and mm-hmm. Ty is like,
yeah,
looking, hating the whole time on him.
That's why he was like, "Hey man, lucky you, Lewis." Lewis, he was like, "Man, that ain't luck."
They were showing that the haters is in your own circle. You saw the rappers was telling you that,
right? You saw the tension back then, and they're only part of the film. I got a hot take.
Oh yeah,
a hot take. Not really a hot take. It's kind of what we do. We've done this before. We're like, we kind of recast. I feel like the movie would have been a little stronger. And the movie was great. And Jamie Lee Curtis was great. I don't need to change her at all. She doesn't need to change her. But what if Jamie Lee Curtis' character, Ophelia, was black. And he fell in love with a black chick that held him down. Of course you'll go through much. Huh?
We talking 1983. They wasn't ready for that.
They wasn't ready for that. I know. A remake? Black Chick is playing that. But back then, you could have had Red Eye Song play that. You know what I'm saying? But, of course, you come with the whole Black Savior, obviously. So then that we would have felt that could have been a little snag. Mm-hmm. But I thought that, once again, Jamie Lee Curtis and that relationship, I dug it. That was a genuine relationship. He was down on his luck, and the chick from the bottom held him down.
Mm-hmm.
And she was white. So it was a class thing, not necessarily a race thing. She was a white girl from middle of nowhere. She said he wouldn't even know the town I'm from. And mm-hmm. She was trying to make it. She was eventually, and she lived amongst the hood, the ghetto.
Yeah.
She was part of the ghetto. So
you know what would have been great, Ja? You know what would have been great? I like that. On the rewrite, Ophelia is black, right? Like, you know, and Billy Ray gets a smashing Muffy. You know what I mean? Like Dan Aykroyd's piece, right? Like, you know, like Penelope. She comes to the house one day and Billy Ray breaks her off, right? Like, you know. Yeah, exactly. Now she's sprung with some door knockers. Like now she's down in West Philly. You know what I mean? Trying to get down. That'd have been great.
Looking for Billy Ray.
That'd have been real trading places. That'd have been dope.
I'm not going to make too many changes. I'm just going to throw my hat in the race and say, okay, I'm going to go with Big Josh change, but I'm going to make Pam Grier the black woman so I can see her titties during that scene. If Pam Grier's titties in that scene would have been enough to change.
Now, you're right. You're right. That could have easily been Foxy Brown, for sure.
Yeah, that's really titties, that's all.
Yeah. I like that. I like that.
That's fantastic. Yeah. That's fantastic.
Jamie Curtis was a real affiliate. I believe her, and there's an authenticity there with her performance. But I just would trade the place. It would be a little stronger had they had a black affiliate.
I think that's really good. The thing about this movie is, aside from Eddie, I get why, like, Dan Aykroyd is funny in like early '80s terms. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like when he's self-destructing, that, like, there are certain people that like that and find that hilarious. Right. Like, you know, when he's in the Santa suit and he's shoving salmon down his jacket. Yeah. Like, you know, and then once we get to the train, the movie really kind of falls apart. Right. Like, you know, the blackface, the caper.
Hello. Hey. Ha. My wife is 72. Like, crazy. I was like, yeah, 83. It's 83, 80. You can say 83. You openly say it multiple times the F word.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I'm in the F word, the F bomb, heavy. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's normal. Even in the 90s, it was normal. Yeah, now you can't say nothing. Yeah. Like, even now, that movie, you can't put it in a black face. I'm going to keep it 100. I know. I personally didn't mind.
No.
For the sake of comedy, I thought it was hilarious. He was like, yeah, man. He was like, Mr. Beaks. I just wanted to stop off in Philadelphia. His accent wasn't that bad for Dan Aykroyd, bro.
I
thought it was funny.
I thought it was funny, too, because it's like, one, because it didn't work. Clarence Beaks took that out right away, and he sucked at it. Just like, she was Inga from Sweden, but like you wearing leather hose and like you're not Sweden. She, like, and you saw everybody, you know, Eddie Murphy doing the African thing and all that stuff. Medi-Nuya and all that stuff. It was like, okay, what's going on here? But I think that was it. You know, one thing about that era is movies back then, you could be ridiculous and people would be like, oh, whatever. Like, you know, yeah, so it was like All in the Family that was on TV in the 70s.
Yeah.
You had the Jeffersons. He called the Windor. He called the neighbor Honky on TV. Mm-hmm. You know, that was a time where it was just like, everybody knew it because there's no, America's just racist now as it was back then. But back then, people didn't pick no bones about it. Let's just make, you know, it wasn't fake.
Yeah, so the Red Foxes, the Red Fires.
Yeah, so.
Honky.
Yeah, all that. And I thought, like, Winthorpe's character, the funniness in his character was in the straightness. Like, him not being funny. It was like, lob on him.
Yeah.
He was so oblivious. He was like, I've never seen it in my life. I mean, it was just ridiculous how posh he was. He was overly stuck up. And it was like, he was doing shit like that. That would make me laugh. Like, the look, the high nose.
Mm-hmm.
Took the nose up and shit. That made me laugh.
It had me crying. It had me crying every time he pointed out what the drugs were. It was PCP. Yeah, exactly. Like it was important that he let you know.
He's such a narcissist. Such an arrogant narcissist that he wants to let people know I'm smarter than everyone. So it wasn't heroin. It was PCP. Yeah. But I've never seen a day in my life.
Yeah,
like, he had to keep, and it made him look more guilty.
Yeah,
you know what I mean,
he just. It wasn't heroin. It was PCP and Angel Duck, right? Like, you know, I just thought, like, that was a great bit. But, like, Eddie steals this movie. Like, Eddie steals this movie from Dan Aykroyd, who was the bigger star, right? You know, you got the cameo by Belushi. And it makes me wonder, because you guys, you know, you may be aware of this, that originally Eddie was supposed to be cast in Ghostbusters.
Oh,
I know that one.
You know what? I want to say I heard that, actually.
So think of it like this. it's all Saturday Night Live alums, pretty much, right? You got Bill Murray, you got Dan Aykroyd, and they offered the role to Eddie. And at the time, Eddie was like, the role is too small for me, right? The role of Winston was too small, and he had gotten bigger than, like, you know, when he kind of like agreed to do it. And so he leaves the movie. They ultimately offered it to Winston, but like Ghostbusters could have, just looking at the way that Eddie was acting and trading places, if you put Eddie Murphy in Ghostbusters and let him do his thing off some panorama shit, he would probably have stole that movie too.
Right.
Oh yeah. He would have stole that.
And it would have been funnier.
Yes. Yes.
Way funnier.
Because Bill Murray, like everybody, like Bill Murray ain't never really been that funny to me. Like some people like fall out, like, you know, the same way like some people don't find like Larry David funny, right? Like, you know, I like Bill Murray in Scrooge. I think he was like pretty good in Scrooge, but like Eddie would have been the funniest person in that movie because he's funnier than Dan Aykroyd. He's funnier than Bill Murray. And like, you know, a brother in New York around some ghosts. Like, I think we might have missed an all-time performance.
I think had he done it, they would have just kept writing more scenes in for him. As like they did with Trading Places. Like, when the whole part of that scene in Trading Places, he was like, jacuzzi? When I was a kid, we had a jacuzzi. We had the fart in the tub. That wasn't in the lines.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I wonder if the police inside the jail, when he was like, I'm a writing master. I wonder if that was in the lines. If it was in the script, I still think he probably acknowledged that.
I think he improv the hell out of that scene. I think a lot of it, you know, anytime it was just him cooking by himself, I think he was probably improvising, you know, a ton of that because it was so authentic. A writer couldn't write that. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I'm a karate man, right? Like, you know,
you
big Barry White looking motherfucker. That.
That was fantastic.
When I saw like a making of a movie, that scene where he's pulling that lady's coat when he was going to scene one, he broke out. Mm-hmm. I was Agent Orange. They would let him go. They didn't write that. Remember, he was just like, "Yeah, blah." Right. With the Green Bay, the Green Berets, Agent Orange,
Battalion, the Chivalry 77 Battalion. Yeah, he was bullshit. The movie, for it to be 83, what's that, 40 years?
That's 41 now.
Yeah.
I was two. Like, I remember seeing that. My dad always had it on VHS tape. And when back in the days when cable only had Suzanne's summer workout videos on in the daytime, in the summertime when you were in school. So I'd be like, this is popping the 40, my dad, we had Eddie Murphy tape. We had 48 Hours, Trade Places, and Golden Child on one tape. Mm-hmm. And we, kids, we just pop the Eddie Murphy tape in and just be watching.
It's on rotation.
And it's on Trading Places. Eddie was just funny. And then when I got to be an adult, I was like, this is about life.
Mm-hmm.
To me as a kid, it was this comedy for me, seeing him being homeless and him like play like he's paralyzed, he had no legs. That shit was hilarious to me. You know what I'm saying? So, but as I got older, I was like, oh, God, this is the best behind this, man. This is smart.
Mm-hmm. It was one of those Trading Places. We were talking about a little bit about music before we got on camera, and you know, like as we all are movie lovers, and sometimes you kind of judge where somebody is by what they've seen, right? Like, you know, like have you ever seen such and such, and they've seen it, you like, okay, you're a real one because you've seen that, right? Trading Places was like one of those movies where if you're really serious about black movies, you've seen it. Right, it was kind of like, if you're really an Eddie fan, you've seen it. But if you really like black movies, you've seen this movie. And so it's one of those kind of like early kind of like box checking movies to let you know, like, are you a real fan? right? Like, you can miss Golden Child. I still feel like Golden Child is required viewing, but did you see Eddie work in Trading Places, right? Because it was just old enough to be out of reach. So if you chose to watch it, either because you discovered it, wanted to see it, or it was in your family, it's kind of like, yeah, you a real one. You've seen Trading Places.
It was on VHS tapes.
Yeah.
It was in that box. That pops had in the corner somewhere. Let me go to the tapes real quick. Nah, I don't want to see Last Dragon today. Nah, I'm not going to watch Woman in the Red. Yeah, Eddie Murphy.
So look, I remember the parallels in relationships between Winthorpe and Penelope when she wanted to have that party. Mom's on the party, but he got work.
Yeah.
And she's throwing a fit. Like, she went up, she wants to parade around. She wants the rich man without him having to work as hard.
Yeah.
And so, and remember when he was down on his luck and he was on his ass, Ophelia was like, bro, I ain't gonna take care of you, man. You're gonna have to work. Everything costs. Yep. Where I'm from, everything, you gotta pay for everything, all right?
Yep.
Including me.
Mm-hmm.
Until he won her over. But like, he was sick, and she stuck the foot for him. She held him down.
Mm-hmm.
He held him down a lot of ways, bro. And so at the end of the day, he finally found real love. He found a chick that was really down for him. She didn't want nothing from him. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And like that little kiss at the train station, that was a moment.
Yeah,
that was a moment. He found him. He found him a little hood chick that he fell in love with.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, with a rack.
With a rack.
Yeah.
Uh huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like how he hit rock bottom, but he found something real in that position. You know what I'm saying? At the lowest point in his life, he found he won. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
So before we get into awards, so here's what's interesting. What did Winthorpe learn anything? Like, is he a better person at the end of this movie? Like, I'm not 100% sure. Like, he got restored.
I know.
Got a better woman, but
they should have had at least one or two, at least one conversation between Billy Ray and Winthorpe. He should be like, hey, you know what? I knew what I was doing when I misjudged you and I lied and you tried to rob me.
Mm-hmm.
I was just looking at you on the outside looking in. I was looking at it, you know what I'm saying? You look like a criminal, so I treated you like one. And by now I know how it feels to be wrongfully accused of something.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So he basically was lied on, just like he lied on Billy Ray. So I think he did on the lesson. Unfortunately, we didn't get in the dialogue.
Yeah.
In my opinion, I feel like you're right that it should have been driven home that, hey, bro, they should have had one conversation, one scene. Hey, bro, you know what? Thank you, man. This experience helped me realize something about myself. You know what I'm saying?
Be like, look, man, I'm sorry for wearing your Harvard tie and driving in your car and fucking in your beds. You know, just something. And then Winthorpe saying, you know, I thought you was nothing. And, you know, I really thought that I was something. But, you know, I apologize for putting you in jail. Because remember, the whole thing started because Winthorpe was actually being a punk.
Yeah.
And then he tried to steal from me. Mm-hmm. And then he did all that. Oh, he's like, He actually tried to give you your bag back, and then you caused this whole. And he never apologized for that. I never back.
And so this is the interesting point. I love this part of the conversation because at first I was like, does Winthorpe need to apologize for anything? I mean, he really didn't do anything wrong, right? Like, you know, they fucked his life up. He just was who he was, right? Like, you know. But then I was like, the way that like he kind of discarded Billy Ray like he wasn't shit. Like he wasn't, you know, nobody to even know or to care about. Like, you know, that kind of like callous understanding, you know what I mean? Like, you know, he lacked that. So in a sense, he kind of needed to go through that. I just don't know if he's a better person on the other side. I just don't know if even after all of that, like, you know, what did he learn?
Look, we want to hope that he learned. We want to hope that he learned to work At the end of the day, he made money with Billy Ray.
Yeah.
Let's look at this brand together. So I'm saying, so like, is it only because the money was there?
Mm-hmm.
But I want to say he learned a lesson because at the end of the day, him and Billy Ray was cool. You know what I'm saying? And I don't think he would have ever went through that had he not went through that transformation period where he was on his ass poor and in poverty.
I'm going to say he didn't learn his lesson. I'm going to say, no, for real. Billy Ray Valentine was an arrogant, not Billy Ray, but Winthrop was an arrogant mofo.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? He's somebody that don't think his crap's ain't. He looked back and he's going to see that as, okay, yeah, them dukes, that was a bet. That's not going to happen again. I got my money up and my money ain't dependent on the dukes no more. I got my own company now. Look, I've been in that stock world. They don't care nothing about nobody. That's a ruthless field. Winthrop got his win. He went on vacation with Billy Ray Valentine. That's probably the last time he saw his ass.
Mm-hmm. You think so?
One went this way. The other went that way.
I want to hope. You know what? This is what ended up happening. They might not. They might only met each other for that small period of time, and they learned a lot, and then separated. And Billy Ray Valentine changed his name to Marcus Grant. He became a top executive at a marketing firm.
I think they stay friends, and I tell you why. Because Winthrop has no community to go back to.
Yeah, right? He's a friend.
He cannot go back to that world, the world of Duke and Duke. He can't go back to the club, right? Like, you know, the club, even if he's rich again, they've pushed him out. So his connection to the elite, even though he's wealthy, he's stained because in their world, there are no blemishes. There aren't no smudges. And that period is a blemish and smudge that he'll never be able to get that stank off of him. They'll always whisper about him, you know, in the country club locker room. So I think he doesn't go back. And he has no other friends.
And
so,
neither does William.
Yeah.
William brought some people to the crib to hang out. And he kicked them all out. But there was a lot of them. I don't have friends. I don't like all these.
Yeah. Let's get into some awards. Oh, one last point.
I'm just gonna say that, man. When it came down to it, Billy Ray Valentine, you know, I think that I like that what John said about him being Marcus Graham. And then, but do you remember the tag in Coming to America? How the callback?
Yeah.
Coming to America. There was that scene, where he dropped the money off. He was like, Winthrop, we're back. Yeah. He was like, I'm still not talking to you. Remember that?
So
I said that to say, you know, I think Winthrop got some new friends in that area. And then they circled back around later on. Duke and Duke came back. And it was a situation. And I think it came back like that. And then they both was like, Billy Ray Valentine, you ain't part of the circle. You Marcus Graham, you marketing now. And we over here with
you. That's fantastic. Yeah. That's fantastic.
Yeah, that would have been dope if some of the execs that was working with Marcus Graham from a different company was Mortimer. Another callback was Mortimer and Randall. That would have been dope.
If Mortimer was in the boardroom with Strong J when she took her drawers off, that would have worked.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, I like that. Like the Quentin Tarantino multiverse. Yeah. Right? Uh-huh. Like, you know, like there are people that keep showing up, right? Like, you know, that you know, that Randolph and Mortimer, they just keep showing up in Eddie movies. That'd be awesome.
Right. Hell yeah. Yep. Nah, man, cool. Fantastic is dope, man.
All right, let's get into some awards. Let's do some awards. So MVP. Who is the MVP of Trading Places, right? This can be actor, character, performance. Who do you guys think is the MVP? Who wins the movie?
The obvious answer is Eddie Murphy.
Right.
But that's the obvious answer, and I'm going to keep that as the winner. But I'm going to say the most important player, probably John Landis for allowing all this freedom.
Huh. Okay. Interesting.
The movie.
Mm-hmm.
He allowed everybody. It was a lot of racist ass like shit that would not be allowed today in that movie. Mm-hmm. I think that's what makes it work. That freedom.
Okay. So you saying the director? That was the first time you've done that.
Yeah. The director gets the most important. Right.
Yeah. The movie is the actors. It's the characters.
Think about it. Oh, okay. I was like, John Landis, that same year, John Landis directed the Thriller video. So, Michael Jackson. So, it's
right. Now he's the man. And for it to be such an older movie and it was so raw, bro.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. The initial would be, the easy call would be Eddie Murphy, but I'm going to go with Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah. Yeah.
I agree, Ja. I think she's the MVP because I think she wins the most out of them all. I mean, like, you know, she went from laying on her back for dough to cashing out big time in the market and landing a big fish for a boyfriend. So in terms of like, you know, like even though we don't know if Billy Ray is homeless. Like, we don't know, you know, we know he's a hustler and a con man, but it seemed like Jamie Lee Curtis was even further back from the starting line than even he was, right?
Right.
And so she wins. She wins the most out of everybody.
She saved up $30,000 or $47,000, bro. That's crazy. That's
right. A lot of fucking.
That's a lot of smashing. That's a lot of mileage on that box.
Yeah.
Woo!
And we talking like 1983 economy. So like, yeah. You know, so she wasn't, you know, she wasn't doing 3,000 a night.
Right. Like, you know, she got it the hard way.
And you see her neighborhood, literally. Her neighborhood in Philadelphia, her box, she was probably $20 a session back then. That's probably
what I'm saying.
It was high price back then.
That's what I'm saying.
They wasn't dropping no money that when she was, mm-hmm. she was, look where she was living. She wasn't living in no hottie flights kind of stuff. Yeah, she was dealing with regular ass niggas named Dexter.
Yeah. Like she earned it. I mean, look, even if you think about it, like she was willing to ride with Winthorpe for $50. Right? So a lot of tread on them tires. So she absolutely won. I think she absolutely won. Played her part in the caper, but I think probably if she doesn't, even just in terms of the movie, if she doesn't care for Winthrop, there's no even opportunity for them to win at the end. Right? Like, you know, she gives him a place to stabilize in order to try to get back.
I want to add to your point about her winning the most. Because mm-hmm. remember she saved, what, 45 grand? Remember, yeah. She gave that whole 45 grand for him to flip. And mm-hmm. they knew the oranges. So we don't know what they made. She flipped 45 grand. She didn't flip 5,000.
45 bands?
Yeah. Nigga, on a guaranteed win in a commodities market, she probably walked away with 2 mils.
Her was crazy.
Think about the fact that, like, whatever it is that they did was enough to bring down Duke and Duke.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So whatever her come up was bananas. Like mm-hmm. bananas. So I think she won. I think that, like, you know, she came up. Okay, LVP. Exactly. LVP. Who's the least valuable? There. Least valuable.
I'm gonna go with the cop.
Reese.
No, with the funny jacket on, you know, the one he got put in the cage with at the end.
He's talking about Beaks.
Beaks, yeah, Clarence Beaks. Clarence Beaks. I'm gonna go with Beaks because Beaks did all that. He was a do boy for the Dukes. He got 60 grand from them one time and 10 grand another time. Remember, he was coming up the whole movie. He got 10 grand for one thing, then they said
50, you want to use 50 for one.
They made 50 for one and then 10 for another. So he was coming up the whole time. And then he turned around. And even though he scooped them and got them with the whole blackface part, which now you said that, you're making me rethink. You said that though. But Beaks, he went through all that. And then he ended up in a cage with some gorillas on the other part of the world. And then the last scene, was that gorilla was trying to love on him. So that Beaks might have had a rectum run by him. Yeah. He might have got beat down and thrown down by gorilla a gorilla. Like, so
that gorilla stroke.
Yeah, hey. I think he is the LVP, and I tell you why. Because you would think for him to be in that role that he was playing for the Duke brothers, that he'd be a lot better at doing a job, right? And so he would not have let anybody into that train car. You know what I mean? Like, you know, as soon as Eddie Murphy walked in, he was either going to say, get out of here, or he was going to move to another car. Like, you know, there's no way a man supposedly as skilled as he, you know, they wouldn't have been able to get that far to get his case and to swap it and to come back. He wouldn't have been sitting in there with them people, right? Like, you know, that wouldn't have happened.
And that was a whole weak. The way he got it was weak. The dude got, hey, you need to start a flashlight, slide it over here. Mm-hmm. You need to go for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, I'm going to get my LVP. My LVP is,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He had no purpose other than, yeah.
You're right. At least the other guy had a line. You shouldn't be a giant turkey this close to Thanksgiving. And he was a very white motherfucker, so you remember him. Other nigga was just, yeah.
I've got another LVP. Oh, boy.
Uh-oh.
My other LVP is the black woman that took her shirt off at the party. Right? I've never been more disappointed with a pair of titties ever. Right? Yeah. It's like, you dancing whack, you ain't got the best rack, you know what I mean? Like, you know, it was like, I'd have been like, bitch, put your shit back on. You know what I mean? Like you ain't even fine enough, you can't dance. Yeah.
She took the top off and covered the little bitties.
Yeah, come on. Come on. I didn't like that.
I was going to say the lady who was waiting up in the bed for him because she was naked and she had a nice rack too. And she out, she was ready to go. And he said, put the walk of shame. She saw the end when she had to walk down. She put her tights back on. It's time to go. She was embarrassed. Yeah.
I can't knock at her for shooting her shot though. She was like, it's flying here. I'm going to wait in this room.
Me more.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, offer him this box and I'm going to move in here.
Man, duh, hey, for real.
So let's give it some awards. On a scale of five black fists being an all-time classic to one, just a regular old movie, how do you guys rank Trading Places?
You want to rank the one?
For me, it's a 5. All day, every day, because it meets all the criteria. It's funny. It's informative. But it's not preachy. It's telling you how life in America works without making you feel like you're in history class. It's giving you a lesson on social and cultural anthropology without you feeling like you're being talked to. You're being taught. Yeah. You're literally being entertained on an anthropological lesson between nurture and nature. You're laughing at a message about the race dynamic in the United States of America. And you're also getting a good laugh at, even if you're down and out, you'd be like, man, let me just keep going. You know, it's nothing wrong with me. If I just keep hustling, maybe I'll get that opportunity to show my worth. And if you're up on top, it's telling you, hey, man, to be humble. Like, you got some lucky breaks. It's not all you. Just make sure you stay focused, because if you lose it, you can lose it all. So it's giving you life game, life lessons. Yeah. Historical lessons, all different levels, and comedy. So I gotta give it 5.
All right, that I'm gonna give it a strong 4.5. 4.5. Definitely is I laughed. I definitely lagged on the rewatch. I didn't lag as hard as I normally did that day, but a lot of that just comes with being grown and certain things not registering with me like they did back then. But I love the film. I watched it again. If I was still a teacher, I would put that show on, that movie on for my class.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And just talk about.
No, finish your thought, John.
Yeah, I was saying, 4.5 for sure.
For me, it's a 4. It's a 4. And again, it falls victim to the way the math works in my mind, right? Coming to America is a five, right?
Yes.
Life is a five. Yes. And this movie, though really good, is not as good as those, in my opinion. Right. So, right. You know, so it's hard to, I know it's a different type of movie, but I can't put Trading Places on the same level that I put Coming to America, right? Right. Even though I really love it and it's a great movie. So I think it just slides down a little bit into the four category. Like still a really good movie. Eddie Murphy is still really fantastic in it. Still requires watching. Yeah. It's just, to me, it's a great four.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
I agree.
It's a great four. Yeah, that's good. Man. That's good.
Four and a half and five. I take it.
Yeah, we're in the range.
It's an older film, y'all. I'm not sure the age demographic of the people who are watching this episode, but go watch young Dan Aykroyd and young Eddie Murphy. Go up there and go back and watch Trading Places.
Mm-hmm.
And see, honestly, I'm not even the person that really enjoys the idea of sequels or reading or remakes, but this wouldn't be a bad remake. It's a classic. Huh?
It would have been great. It would have been fantastic.
I don't see it being better. I don't think anybody in the game better than Jamie Eagle right now. But and if it wasn't a remake, because I know remakes of classics are hard to do, hard to even want to see it get done. But I would just love to see the concept of today's climate, corporate world, white guy, and everything taken from. Well, kind of, it wasn't the same thing. But Nothing to Lose, when we did this last year. Mm-hmm. Nothing to Lose with Tim Robbins and Martin Lawrence.
Yeah.
Martin Lawrence, remember, there was no Trading Places, but this guy, a corporate marketing firm guy, he ends up getting down on his luck, and now he's basically going through his days with this black youth in the hood that has no real job. And he's just really struggling in life, and they both struggling together as if he's basically the same lifestyle as him. It's different, but there is some kind of similarity there.
Class act is kind of, you know, class got act. Shades of that. Mm-hmm. Strictly Business has a little bit of shades of that. But I think it would have been great. Like, the timing, of course, is off, but like when the Duke brothers get the money in Coming to America, it would have been great to see them try to exact their revenge on Winthrop and Billy Ray. Right? I mean, imagine they get their money back. Like, they get their money and they've got an axe to grind. Right? Like, you know, and maybe they make another bet that, like, we can take them down. You know what I mean? Like, that, it would have been fun. Like, it would have been fun to see, like, Winthrop, like, have to be in the hood. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. Like, you know, like, they made him slummy and drunky, but, like, you know. Right.
Wow, I want to see them do it. I want to see them live in the apartment complex that they trash out. Snow from the front door. Want to see that. When they snuggle in the snow, that's to get inside the car and then working for like minimum wage. I want to see that.
If it was going to be a remake, it would have had to have happened in the 80s.
Yeah.
It didn't happen now. Like,
the window's closed.
Yeah, the window's closed because movies today aren't that intelligent. Like, they would try to wedge in too many agendas now, and they will lose the story.
Social media guys,
you have to address this group and address that and address this issue. And when you're trying to make a cake for everybody, nobody likes the cake. And so that was during a time where it was a direct message to where it can be substantive. Like, now it would be too watered down and diluted.
You know what else I thought was kind of funny is, like, how did any transactions get done that old school way on the stock market floor? Right,
I know.
It was just chaos. It was like, how does anything happen?
Sell.
Like, that doesn't make any sense.
205. Like, how do you know I'm the one that said 205? And
yeah, like, there's paper everywhere. It's chaos. How do you keep track of all those transactions?
When I was a kid and watching the news, remember they would always start the closing bell, you would really see that on the news, though. They would really be in that room, like, I still don't get it.
The boiling room? Yeah. I don't know how to keep track of everything.
Yeah. Like, I know it's all electronic now, but back then, like, it literally was just paper flying. Like, you know, and so How do you know that your transaction got in? Like, how do you sell that much for that many people? It's just, I don't understand.
I know that it accounted, Mark.
Right. That's crazy. All right, dude.
Man. All right. Trading Places is a good one, man.
Yeah.
A lot of talking points. Very interesting. More than just a comedy. Once again, this is your host, Big John, along with my co-host,
Trading Tone.
And you just watched another No Best episode of Blockbusters, the best the best movie review podcast in the world.
In the world, Craig.
In the world, Craig.
In the world,
Thank you for our guests, our illustrious guest, my boy, my brother, DeLon Brown.
Yes, sir.
I'll bring you back for another one, man.
Yes,
he's,
sir.
He's a very intelligent man. He's well-read. He's well-read. He's a film connoisseur, this one is.
Yes, indeed. I tell the people where they can catch you at, bro, where they can follow you at.
You can follow me at Dewan B. Y'all see my name down there, but just make it, put the at sign in front of it, at DWANNB. That's DewanB.com. Dewan B on Twitter. On YouTube is at Dewan B. On Instagram is at Dewan B. On TikTok is at Dewan with no B on the end. But DewanB.com, Patreon.com/DewanB. All that stuff is on at Dewan B. Everything that I'm doing, DewanB.com.
I love it. Yes, sir.
Perfect.
That's the time, y'all. Catch next time. I'm like, listen, man, we love it. We love y'all. Be good or be good at it. Cue to the max.
Blockbusters.